Shall we begin?
Let's begin now.
You're listening to the Dishin' and Swishin' podcast on HoopFeed.com.
Hi, everybody. It's David Siegel. Happy New Year to all of you, and welcome to the first Dishin' and Swishin' podcast of 2016. It's going to be a fun year for everybody, and you know what? One person is having a real lot of fun right now out in California, and that is Coach Corey Close of UCLA, ranked number 15 in the AP poll, 21 in the coaches poll, and just had a couple of great wins, including a big upset of Oregon State. Coach, welcome back to Dishin' and Swishin'. It's great to talk to you again.
Well, thanks so much for having me. We appreciate you East Coasters remembering us California kids out here.
Well, every time, you know, my dog gets up in the middle of the night sometimes, so I get to see you guys on late-night television after Jimmy Fallon and everything else.
Then there's Pac-12 Networks after Jimmy Fallon. I like it.
Coach, let's talk about this great start of the season. You know, the team sits at 11-3, and those losses, you know, 3 points to South Carolina, 8 to Notre Dame in overtime, and one of the best games of the season, that game against Cal, which lost by 4 in double OT. You know, just tremendous games, and the season is really, really rolling.
Well, I think, you know, it's hard because those were great games, but we weren't on the winning end of any of those great games. So it was really important for us as we came back from the new year to really make another step and to have a really good team that we got over the hump with. And so our win versus Oregon State, who's a really, really good team, was a great boost for our players. And just taking that step forward, we can finally say, hey, we actually won one of those games.
Well, before we get specifics with your team, let's talk for a sec about the Pac-12. I mean, this is a conference that has been on the rise the last couple of years. And really, this year in particular, it just seems that, you know, they always talked in the East about the SEC and ACC, about everybody beating each other up and how you'll never see perfect record teams because of that. Well, the Pac-12 is now in that same league where it's not just Stanford and everybody else. You're all beating each other up. You're all quality teams.
Well, I think it's a difference. I think, you know, there's been a steady climb, as you referred to, from the Pac-12, and we've been trying to politic out here to let people know on the East Coast what the growth has been having, we've been having out here. But the reality is this year the data backs it up. You know, we have the number one RPI conference going into conference play. You know, I could make a case for 8 teams in the NCAA tournament. You know, I just think the strength of the conference really is so good, and it's not just, oh, come look at us, you know, I hope you like what you see. I mean, it's a real deal. I mean, we have quality wins. Our winning percentage in the non-conference was better than anybody else's. And I just think it's really, I mean, it's a credit to the Pac-12 networks and the exposure that they've given us, and it's allowed us to keep really good talent home on the West Coast. But I can't say another year where the Pac-12 has been this good for as long as I can remember.
And you guys are playing some fun basketball, too. It's not like it's a methodical, you know, slow down, hard to watch type of game. You know, each of the teams are, you know, you like to get up and down the court. You're playing aggressive defense. You play fast. It's a lot of fun to watch.
Well, great job for you doing your homework on all those styles of play. Good job. But, you know, you think about from Washington having the leading scorer in the nation in Kelsey Plum. You've got, you know, obviously Oregon State, who's returning almost everybody and plays this, you know, open style. But they've got the great Ruth Hamlin in the middle. But then you've got all these great shooters and Jamie Wisner on the outside. And, you know, go right on down the list. You know, Christine Enigwe from Cal has got to be one of the best freshmen in the country. You know, I mean, it's just right on down the list. I mean, I could make quite a case. And I think the style is something that there's versatility. People like to get up and down the court. There's intense defense. You know, I think you're seeing a lot of movement without the ball, fluidity. So it really is a fun style to watch.
You know, let's go back a year and let's talk about last season for a second. Now, you know, it's funny. People talk about the schedule that Kevin McGough has at Ohio State starting the year with really playing all of last year's Final Four teams. Last year, you had such an ambitious schedule as well, with a bunch of young players, you know, playing Notre Dame and UConn. You know, and right. and Nebraska and Texas. I mean, you took that on, and you guys took your lumps a little. And people got, you know, were sort of critical of it last year,
right.
saying that it was too much too soon. But by the end of the year, you know, the WNIT run proved that this team just needed an opportunity to come together.
Well, if I'm really being, you know, honest, I think they're probably right. It probably was too much too soon. In hindsight, you know, Kevin McGuff picked up probably a better year than I did to have that kind of schedule based on the maturity of his team versus the maturity of my team last year. You know, it was really hard. It made for a real struggle last year. I called it the year of pruning, you know. You can't have really beautiful rose bushes until you get, you know, prune them all back. And I felt like that's all we did last year is really, you know, get humbled a little bit and realize, okay, this is what it really takes at this level, you know. And put your big girl panties on. Let's go to work here. You got to get a hard hat, and nothing's going to become easily. We had a lot of publicity on our number one recruiting class, which is great, and they've earned that, and I'm happy for them. But all that is potential. I mean, they hadn't earned anything yet, and we hadn't earned anything yet. And I think there was probably too much expectation for a group of young kids who hadn't really understood what it means to win at this level yet. And then you put the schedule, you know, combined with that. It was really difficult. I do think it started to pay dividends at the end of the year, and obviously winning the NIT was a huge part for that. I actually think we're paying the dividends right now. There's a level of confidence when we go into those games versus, you know, South Carolina or Notre Dame or, you know, whatever the case might be, that we've been there. We've done that. There's really no deer in the headlights, and there's just an expectation that we've already competed at this level, and we're different now. And so last year, you know, I really wouldn't have disagreed with some of the critics that it was probably too much too fast. But I will also say, on the other hand, we are experiencing some of the benefits this year.
One of the other things that I always talk about is I always feel that whenever a player gets an opportunity to play internationally, play for USA Basketball,
right.
or in the case of Nera Fields for Canada, I think that it exponentially grows their game because they're playing against adults and they're playing against other top-notch players. And
right.
I think that in the consistency that your young point guard, sophomore Canada, and
mm-hmm.
senior Fields are playing with this year, I think that shows a lot of the international experience from the summer.
I think it has been tremendous. You know, Jordan Canada went in with sort of a chip on her shoulder trying out for those teams. I really wasn't sure how well she was going to do. I know how talented she was, but I knew she was going to be one of the youngest ones to make either one of the Pan Am team or the World University Games. And sure enough, she was the youngest player on either of those two teams and played more minutes than anyone else, started every game at the point guard. And I think it just was so big for her confidence, for her consistency. I think you're absolutely right. And Nera Fields, you know, making the, you know, Olympic-level team for Team Canada and then having that experience at home that she got to share with her family. It was not only incredible for her basketball experience, but I think it was just a boost emotionally. She'd never been able to share that kind of basketball with her family. Her family had never seen her play like that. And so it was really powerful. And then you had also Paulina Hersler, who played for Sweden in the World University Games. And so, you know, all that experience, all those things that cumulatively get put together on a team, I do think that that really multiplies the experience of the offseason.
Well, now you look at your team, though, and you are still very young. You only have a couple of seniors and really only a couple of juniors. They all play their important roles on the team. But, you know, the heart of the team is still that young group. And you've got them around for a few years, and that's not a good thing for the Pac-12.
Well, let's hope I don't screw it up, you know, but, you know, this group, it's really been a very simple thing. I mean, you can sort of look at South Carolina's growth curve. If you go back and look at how many years it took and sort of how they methodically did it, I think we're sort of on a similar path out here on the West Coast, that there's no quick fixes, and if you want sustained excellence, it's not going to happen overnight. But I do think if we can continue to be committed to just the development, player development is so big for us out here, and you know, at UCLA, we just got to keep getting them better. And also for them to have the commitment to really have those kind of work ethic. Our big theme all offseason was do the work, build discipline, build chemistry. I mean, it was just really just you got to go earn what you want. And so I'm very hopeful that with the talented group that we have, if they can maintain that commitment to discipline and commitment to being a great teammate, We're going to have some sustained excellence over time, and we're excited about exploring that.
You know, a lot of people knew about Canada coming in and knew about Fields, and, well, most of the freshman class everybody knew about, but Monique Billings has really stepped up this year. You know, the big girl at 6'4" has been, you know, really doing a nice job, third leading scorer on the team. You know, you got to be really pleased with the way that she's been playing.
She was sort of the one nobody talked about when we signed that class. And, you know, I think she has just made a huge commitment. She shot 50, and it's a small thing in some people's eyes. We talk about just transferring points. She shot 56% from the free throw line last year, and she's shooting almost 80 this year. She put the work in, and her footwork, I mean, we used to joke that, you know, she would travel 80% of the time, but the refs would only call it 20% of the time. I mean, she has committed to footwork. I mean, it's just like the dirty work, you know, free throws and footwork. And she was a great athlete when we got her, but she wasn't a great basketball player yet. And she has put in the thankless work. We call it the thankless work in the dark gets revealed in the light. And she has been someone who's been willing to do that boring stuff. That really leads to exponential growth. And I really believe she's, I mean, I haven't been able to find a post player or a forward in the country who's improved more in a year than Monique Billings. The way she's shooting the perimeter jumper, the way she's altering shots without fouling, the discipline of that. She's really becoming an elite player, and she really has put in the commitment and the work, and she deserves all the credit.
And you mentioned the footwork and the turnovers and such. She's down, you know, she's just about 1-to-1 assist to turnovers, and also blocks the turnovers. So you can't.
That's a huge thing.
Yeah, you know, that's pretty good for a post. That's for sure.
Well, it's pretty good for a post, and you know, something we do research every year on all the Elite Eight games and above, like literally every single possession. And one of the things that we found, and we've really tried to foster blocking shots that stay in bounds, we found that next to a live ball turnover, the biggest indicator of an offensive efficiency on the next possession is a blocked shot that stays in bounds. Next to a live ball turnover, that determines offensive success. And so for Monique Billings to be a great athlete and to have so many more of those blocked shots and not having as many turnovers, not have as many fouls, not only does it help us get stops, but it leads to offense, higher percentage offense. And so she's really affecting the game in many different ways. She's really been a fun surprise, and she has she's really burst onto the national scene.
It is so nice to hear a coach talk about controlling the ball on a block, because I'm one of those people that never was a big fan. Sure, you get the ooh-ah moment when somebody sends it into the crowd, but what good is it in giving the ball right back to them?
Well, I call it a hero or a zero play. You know, I mean, you can be the hero, but in essence, it's a zero play. It doesn't do anything other than get some people all fired up and give you a false sense of what you just did. You know, I think being able to block shots with both hands, being able to have it come in stay in bounds, you know, having the discipline to do the work with your feet. It's sort of old school, but, you know, I always say, do you want oohs and ahs, or do you want the ball to go in the basket? You know, I mean, you know, what do you want? And so I'm a big believer in you gotta do what's best for the team and what helps the team, and I don't care what the crowd says.
You know, Coach, I wanted to go a little bit off the court, too. There was something, I read an interesting article about you in one of the UCLA periodicals this winter, or last winter, about your relationship with John Wooden and the fact that you got along so well and you sort of embraced not only his basketball knowledge, but you spent a lot of time talking about the off-the-court things and how important, you know, life can be, and that this isn't the be-all, end-all. And the way that you've now turned that into your team doing good work in the community and embracing a family that needed help. And, you know, it's just very interesting to me the way that, you know, you have taken your belief and your feelings for the outside world and brought them in-house without being preachy about it either.
Well, thank you. Well, it really, my beliefs are my beliefs in my own life. That's not really what I'm about in terms of leading this program. I hope that's just something I live for what I'm committed to. But I am really big for the program about being people of gratitude, being lifestyle givers. I just think that's, you really traced it very well. I probably don't even need to comment. Coach Wooden mentored me, and he continues to, you know, impart that into his players. Like, for instance, I spend consistent time with Keith Erickson, one of the old school guys, and he always talks about when all the guys get back together, how little they talk about the games. And the reality is, for me, is that over 365 days times 4 to 5 years, there's not going to be that many of those that have games involved. You know, they say the average Division I basketball player spends about 3,500 hours in their sport over 4 years, and only 4% of those hours are in games. So what am I doing for the young people that are under my supervision if I'm not giving them things that empower them for their lives? And, you know, I'm a huge believer that if you want a meaningful life, then learn to give to others and impact others. I mean, not many people would argue that that's where the most joy comes from. So if I really want that for them, that's what we have to practice and model throughout what we do. But let's not fool ourselves. I don't want to be, act like there's this big halo around our program. It sure isn't. The reality is it also makes us a better basketball team. You know, when you are committed to things bigger than yourself, when you realize how fortunate you are, when you have a sense of how important it is to give back, that it's not just about you, it's about paying it forward, you usually play harder for each other. And you usually have a desire to be a selfless teammate. And so it's fostering us as a basketball team, both on and off the court. I mean, you know, when you get to go down and provide, this family that we've adopted this year has 9 children, and when you get to go down and provide Christmas for that family, I mean, I hope we really make an impact on them. But you don't think that our hearts are bursting with joy as we come back to campus? I mean, that's a privilege. When we get to go to the Bahamas and go to one of the most under-resourced schools and put 180 new socks and shoes on kids and play with them, you know, I hope we're providing for their needs, but you don't think it changes our hearts too? It's really a win-win, and I do give Coach Wooden all the credit for that. That's how he lived. He always cared about the development of his young men more than he cared about the final score of any one game, and he really lived that, and his guys still talk about it. And so who would I be if I didn't pay that forward after the example that he had given me?
Now, Coach, I'm going to put you on the spot on one other thing. Now, UCLA is one of the legendary basketball institutions. What do we have to do to get attendance to continue to grow? You know, 2,100 people is for a major game like you just had is not acceptable in my eyes. What do we got to do to get the student body out?
Well, you know, I think we got to we've had 3 marketing people in 4 years, and I think that's a big – actually, I just had a conversation with our athletic director 2 days ago about this, and both of my athletic directors, Katrina Long and Dan Guerrero, really are very, very supportive, and you're going to see some huge commitments and changes on that in the next 9 months. We are going to, you know, really we need to. I couldn't agree with you more. We've been really growing steadily, even in years where we're struggling on the court, you know, and we've got to take a step up in that area. We have to really focus on the right ways. I think it's not just the students. I think it's understand families within 5 miles. In L.A., you can't go too far because of traffic and the way the TV dictates our times of games. You have to know how you're marketing, and it's not going to be, no billboards on the highways aren't going to bring people in, so to speak. You got to do the work 10 by 10. You know, I think about some of the legendary people who have done it. You know, I look at the Pat Summits of the world, obviously the Genos of the world, and now look at how Dawn Staley's done it at South Carolina. Obviously, some of those are easier because of the towns that they're in. But I do think that they did it all by relationships, and they did it by 10 by 10, not thousands by thousands. And I think it's a year-round commitment. But that is the next piece for us. It's not only having a top 10 basketball program on the court. It's not only doing amazing things in the lives of our student-athletes, but it's also providing a competitive environment that's fun and exciting and also great for recruiting.
You mean, Coach, there's more entertainment dollar uses in Los Angeles than in stores?
I know.
Than in stores, Connecticut? I mean, come on.
I know. It's a little bit challenging that way. I mean, it's a challenge for the Lakers and the Clippers, just like it's a challenge for us. I mean, you go to those games, and it's a similar challenge. But, you know, it is. Sometimes you're not even battling some of those things. You're battling a gorgeous 75 degrees day on a Sunday afternoon, and people are wanting to go to the beach, you know. So those are good problems to have, but it's a nut we have to crack, and you will see us figure it out.
Well, you know, we're sitting here, and we're trying to fight 20-degree weather and deciding whether or not to watch Netflix or tip a cow. So,
well, I guess I shouldn't complain then, huh?
Not at all. Coach, congratulations on a great start. I'm looking forward to seeing what the rest of 2016 brings for the Bruins. It's always great in my eyes when UCLA is a competitive team and right up there in the top, and it's nice to see some new blood in, from the Pac-12, that it's not just Stanford and, like so many people got used to saying it was.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you for what you do for our game. I mean, I think it's we need people that are passionate about our game and that are willing to tell the story, so it means a lot to me that you would have us on, but also that just for you, what you do for everybody in our great game. So thank you for that. And hopefully we'll represent the West Coast well. I'm excited about the entire Pac-12, and it's going to be a fun year in women's basketball.
Yeah, I got to give credit where it's due. Last year, when we had our preseason NCAA roundtable, Cindy Brunson predicted 8 teams from the Pac-12 into the tournament. She just, I think, was a year too soon.
I think you're right. I love Cindy, and I love her commitment to the Pac-12, but I honestly think you're going to see 8 in the tournament.
Well, that would be wonderful. Coach, good luck, and thanks again.
All right, thank you so much. Have a great day.